welcome to Teck Resources Q2 2017 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Thursday, July 27, 2017. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Fraser Phillips, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Paul. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Teck's second quarter 2017 results conference call. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide 2. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thanks, Fraser, and good morning, everyone. I will begin on slide 3 with some highlights from our second quarter results, and then Ron Millos, our CFO, will provide additional color from a financial perspective. We will conclude with a Q&A session, and Ron and I and additional members of our senior management team would be happy to answer any questions. You may recall that we characterized Q1 as one of the most difficult starts to a year. We believe that our second quarter results demonstrate that the issues experienced earlier in the year are largely now behind us. We set second quarter records for coal production, records for coal sales, and for zinc production at Antamina. And with these strong operating results and improving prices, our gross profit before depreciation and amortization was almost $900 million higher in Q2 than in the same quarter last year, and we are generating significant free cash flow at current prices. At Fort Hills, construction is now more than 92% complete, and we are 5 months away from first oil. We are being careful in our capital allocation and strictly managing our sustaining and development capex. For more than a year, we have indicated that debt reduction was the priority, and we have continued to act on that. With an additional $260 million U.S. dollars in notes purchased during the quarter, we have now achieved our target of notes outstanding below $5 million U.S. dollars. We're now at $4.8 billion U.S. That's down from $7.2 billion. We've also increased returns to shareholders. We announced a new dividend policy in April that doubles our base dividend to 20 cents per share annually, and it considers the potential for a supplemental amount in the fourth quarter each year at the discretion of the board and depending on our outlook and future capital needs. We also announced today that our next quarterly base dividend of 5 cents per share will be paid on September 29th. In May, we announced an agreement to sell our two-thirds interest in the Waneta Dam for $1.2 billion in cash. In June, we announced the acquisition of Goldcorp's 21% interest in the St. Nicholas Copper Zinc Project for $50 million U.S. dollars, which is one of the five base metals properties in our satellite project. We view this as prudent housekeeping that consolidates control and gives us additional flexibility in advancing the project. We continue to consider all options to generate additional value for our shareholders at each of the satellite project properties. Finally, we were pleased to be named to the 2017 Best 50 Corporate Citizens in Canada based on 14 different sustainability metrics. It is the fifth consecutive year that we've been recognized by Corporate Knights on this list. Now, looking at the overview of our second quarter financial results on slide 4, revenue was up 62% compared with the same quarter last year to $2.8 billion, primarily due to significantly higher steelmaking coal prices and also helped by higher zinc and copper prices. Bottom line profit attributable to shareholders was $577 million. After removing unusual items, adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was also $577 million, or $1 per share. That's a very significant increase from the 1 cent per share in Q2 last year. I'll now run through our quarterly results by business unit, starting with steelmaking coal on slide 5. Revenues grew by more than $900 million compared with Q2 2016, again, principally due to significantly higher prices. Our realized price doubled to an average of $169 U.S. dollars per ton. As I mentioned earlier, we set second quarter records for both sales and production at 6.962 million tons and 6.8 million tons, respectively. And this was achieved even though we had an extended winter period in the Elk Valley with snow that was seen right through to the middle of June. We elected to advance some of our annual processing plant maintenance shutdowns into the quarter from later in the year to draw down on-site inventories and restore operational flexibility. This resulted in slightly lower production than we had expected and increased our site costs, which came in at $53 per ton, and transportation costs were also up $2 per ton. But by advancing those plant maintenance shutdowns, it really sets us up for a good run in Q3. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up more than $700 million over last year's second quarter. Looking forward, for Q3 sales are expected to be at least 7 million tons. And for the full year, we now expect total production to be 27.0 to 27.5 million tons versus the 27 to 28 million tons we had guided to previously. And this reflects stronger production in the second half of the year, given that our annual maintenance shutdowns are largely behind us, as I mentioned. Please note that sales could be up to 500,000 tons higher than production for the full year due to inventory drawdowns. And we also now expect site costs to be $49 to $53 per ton for the full year, and we continue to expect transportation costs to be in the $35 to $37 per ton range. Looking at the steelmaking coal market on slide 6, Cyclone Debbie hit Australia in April, generating panic buying again and resulting in prices exceeding $300 per ton for the fourth time since 2008. The extreme price volatility led to irregular purchasing, and very few transactions were observed in the five-week period from mid-April to mid-May. After covering short-term requirements, mainly with resold cargoes originally destined to China and increased supply from North America and Mozambique, customers retreated from the market until spot prices returned nearer to the pre-cyclone levels. As a result, we also experienced weak sales during that five-week period, slightly reducing volumes shipped totally in the quarter. Cyclone Debbie also delayed the quarterly benchmark negotiations and triggered a change in pricing mechanism and the pricing practice. For coal sold under quarterly contracts, the pricing mechanism has changed from a negotiated quarterly benchmark to an index-linked pricing mechanism based on the average of key premium steelmaking coal spot price assessments effective April 1, 2017. We currently expect our overall realized price relative to the price assessments to be similar to what it has been relative to the negotiated quarterly benchmark, but further changes could still occur. More recently, we have been seeing good demand for our products, with first half global crude steel production increasing 4.5% year over year, and China crude steel production reaching a new monthly record high of 73 million tons in June. New supply disruptions are also impacting Australia and U.S. steelmaking coal exports. As a result, spot prices have increased by more than $30 per ton from the lows, and they are currently trading well above $170 per ton for the highest quality products. I think we're at about $178 today. Turning to our base metal businesses, and starting with copper on slide 7, production and sales declined from Q2 last year, driven by lower production to Highland Valley as a result of the lower ore grades that have been anticipated in the mine plan. At the same time, revenue and gross profit were up, and cash costs net of byproduct credits were down from Q2 last year. And this was primarily due to higher realized prices and substantially higher zinc sales from Antamina as a result of record zinc production there. Looking forward, copper production is expected to be higher in the second half of the year, gradually improving as the year progresses, as grade now starts to improve. There is no change to our production or our cost guidance for the full year. Our zinc business units are summarized on slide 8. And as a reminder, Antamina zinc-related financial results are reported in our copper business unit. Revenues were up 21%. To $660 million, reflecting the higher zinc prices. At Red Dog, zinc sales came in slightly higher than guidance at around 83,000 tons as smelters continue to draw down consignment inventory due to tightness in the concentrate market. However, Our zinc and concentrate production was down. We had reported last quarter, as you'll remember, that we had to lower the amount of higher-grade Kaniak ore processed due to some metallurgical issues. We expect to be able to include more of this material in the ore feed as we gain more processing experience with it week by week. At Trail, refined zinc production was up, primarily due to higher feed rates. Operating disruptions at some mines that supply lead concentrates did impact our refined lead and silver production. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up 50% to $196 million. Looking forward, Red Dog's concentrate shipping season commenced in July, with the first sailing on July 4th. We expect Red Dog sales of contained zinc to be around 145,000 tons in Q3 and 165,000 tons in Q4, and that would reflect our normal seasonal pattern. There is no change to our production guidance for the full year. Now turning to an update on Fort Hills on slide 9. As I mentioned earlier, we are now 5 months from first oil. Construction is now more than 92% complete. Four of the six major project areas have now been turned over to operations, and the focus remains on the completion of the utilities area and secondary extraction. Over 90% of operations personnel have now been hired. In the second quarter, our share of capital expenditures was $201 million. As noted in our release, there is a recent disagreement among the Fort Hills partners regarding ongoing funding for the project. What I can say is that with the project 92% complete, logic suggests that it will get built. We remain comfortable with our guidance regarding our $780 million share of Fort Hills costs for 2017. We are not obligated to fund more than our 20% share of project costs. And at this point, I should say that we are not in a position to discuss details of the funding issue while the matter is under discussion among the Fort Hills partners. With the expected completion of the utilities component of the project in Q3, Suncor plans to initiate froth production in September, and froth is the product from the primary extraction plant at Fort Hills. It'll be trucked to Suncor's base plant for further processing until the last component of the project, that is the secondary extraction area, is completed. And this will allow for the majority of the plant to be fully commissioned and operating when the secondary extraction plant starts operation later in the year. The focus of commissioning will then be able to shift to secondary extraction at that time. And with that, I will turn it over to Ron for additional color from a financial perspective.
Thanks, Don. Slide 10 summarizes our second quarter pricing adjustments. And overall, we had $3 million in negative adjustments this quarter compared with $1 million in negative adjustments in the second quarter of 2016. The adjustments were small in both of these quarters as copper and zinc prices did not change much during the quarters. And these adjustments are included in our income statement under other operating income and expense. The chart on the left represents a simplified relationship between the change in copper and zinc prices and the reported settlement pricing adjustment and continues to provide a good estimate each quarter. And in the second quarter, our pricing adjustments was right on the line as suggested by our model. Moving on to slide 11, we've summarized our changes in cash. Our cash flow from operations was $1.4 billion in Q2, and please note that this includes US$144 million of provisional pricing payments made by our coal customers on second quarter sales, which will be refunded to our customers in the third quarter now that there's clarity on the second quarter coal price. Proceeds from the sale of investments and other assets totaled $13 million. We repaid a total of $382 million in debt in the quarter in Canadian dollar terms, which included the repurchase of the $260 million principal amount of our outstanding notes that Don mentioned earlier. We spent $329 million on capital projects, including Fort Hills, and capitalized stripping costs were $173 million. And we also paid $87 million on interest and finance charges and $58 million in dividends. After these and other minor items, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of around $850 million. Our liquidity remains strong at $4.5 billion, including our current cash balance of $930 million, and that's net of the refunds that we expect to provide to the customers for the steelmaking coal settlements, and also includes the undrawn US$3 billion credit facility that we have. Moving on to the next slide, looking at an update on our debt reduction. As Don mentioned earlier, we've achieved the target that we had set, reducing our outstanding notes to below $5 billion. We currently have $4.8 billion in public notes outstanding, which represents a substantial $2.4 billion reduction from what was outstanding in September of 2015. As a result, our debt to debt plus equity ratio is now down to 26%, and our debt adjusted EBITDA ratio is about 1.2%, and that's well into investment grade territory. Our net debt to debt plus equity ratio is currently 23% without taking into account proceeds from the Juanita transaction. And this meaningful progress that we have made in reducing the debt and our strong free cash flow were noted by Moody's when they upgraded our debt by one notch to Baa2 with a stable outlook last week. And it's important to note that we've deliberately managed our debt profile to ensure that we have very little debt due before 2021, which covers the majority of the QB2 construction period if that project ultimately goes forward. So going forward, we may continue to reduce debt on an opportunistic basis, depending on our view of the outlook and commodity prices in the near future. With that, I'll pass it back to Don for closing comments.
Thanks very much, Ron. So in summary, on slide 13, I'm very excited about the outlook for the second half of the year and beyond. We're set up particularly well for Q3. We've overcome what was a very difficult start to the year and set second quarter production records for coal and zinc. We are generating strong free cash flow at current prices, and as the world's largest net miner of zinc, we have exposure to the potential upside in what we believe remains a very tight market. First oil from Fort Hills is now only 5 months away, and we are in a solid financial position for the future. We have achieved our target for debt reduction, and really importantly, we've eliminated essentially all of our note maturities out to 2021. So 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, essentially all the maturities are gone, and even in 2021, it's only a little bit over $200 million. We currently have over $4.5 billion in liquidity. And with that, we would be happy to answer your questions, and please note that some of our management team members may be on the line in different locations. Well, in fact, they are on the line in different locations, so there may be a brief pause after you ask your questions as we sort that out. Okay. Back to you, operator.
Thank you. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. Please limit your inquiry to one question plus one follow-up question. After that, if you have further questions, please rejoin the queue. So please press star one at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. We thank you for your patience. The first question is from Chris Terry from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys, and well done on a solid quarter. Just interested in Red Dog with the Kinnaik ore and how that's going. Did you learn much over the quarter on the recovery side, or is it more just about managing the blend of it going forward?
Thanks. I guess I'll turn that over to Dale Andrus on the line.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. We did scale back in the second quarter after our experience in the first quarter with the amount of Kinnaik ore. The average percentage of that ore feed in the first quarter was kind of in the 18 to 20% range. We scaled that back to 10 or 11% in the second quarter, and the process did stabilize. Obviously, the grades were similar and lower, a little bit lower as a result of that. But the ore does get better and less weathered as we progress through the new pit at depth. And we're starting to trial some blends going forward in the second half at a little bit higher grade. So we're encouraged by the progress in the second quarter. But right now, it's still a metallurgically complex ore, and we'll have to work our way through that in the third and fourth quarters through this year, but quite hopeful that and confident that we're going to be able to increase that as we go deeper.
Okay, thanks. And then just following up on the operational side, on the coal, you mentioned some geotechnical issues there. And you've obviously given stronger guidance for the second half. So is that all behind now, or still could push into 3Q, or you know where are those two issues at?
Okay, I'll turn that over to Robin Sherman.
Thanks. They're not significant issues. They're two different geotechnical challenges we have, mostly up at Cardinal River. So it's pretty much isolated to one mine. Those issues can delay some of the release of coal, and that at that particular mine site, we've got capacity to make up some of that shortfall at the other mine site. So on balance, I'm not too concerned about the issues we have, but they can, from time to time, disrupt some of the shorter-term release of coal for us.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Matt Murray from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Morning. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on your thoughts on capital allocation now, given, since Investor Day in Q1, we've had the additional financing from Waneta, and we've got Met Coal rallying again. So, you know, pretty good free cash flow outlook, and you've achieved your debt target. So just wondering how you're thinking about dividend versus go even more conservative on the balance sheet versus your growth options, you know, whether organic or acquisitions, your thoughts there. Thanks.
Okay, that's a fairly broad question. I'll try and break it down into sort of two or three sections. So first on Waneta, the deal won't close for some time yet. The earliest it might close would be the end of this year, and of course, depending on who the ultimate buyer is, you'll recall that while we have the transaction with Fortis, BC Hydro does have a right of first offer, and they're just working through that process now. So depending on who it is, it might go into next year before it closes. So that additional capital, till it's on the balance sheet, I'm not going to spend it till we see it, or that you'll understand our approach there. In terms of dividends, the November board meeting is when we would look at whether there's a supplemental dividend. That is the policy to look at once a year, and it's a board decision and depends on the outlook for the operations, for commodity prices, and future capital needs, which then leads to sort of the third party question on capital allocation. We're continuing to move ahead on permitting for QB2. We're encouraged, but we aren't expecting to have it till first half of next year, hopefully earlier part of that first half, but we still have to work through that process, and as you know, those timelines have been unpredictable in the past, and so we don't know if it'll be on that schedule or later, or in fact even earlier. So I think we're just kind of working through all those issues first before making any key decisions. I can say that to the extent that you mentioned acquisitions, we don't really see anything out there that's good value to be able to buy in the public markets. It always depends on what your outlook for commodity prices are, but even if you assumed a $3 copper price long term, it's tough to make the numbers work. And also, one of our key criteria, which I've talked about before, is mine life to payback. And when you look at that ratio, most of what's out there trading publicly that would be in a size that we could manage doesn't really measure up on that key ratio. So we don't see much going on there. In terms of our project portfolio, we're very pleased with how our portfolio looks relative to competitors in that we have actually four projects between Quebrada Blanca 2, Nuevo Unión, Zafranal, and St. Nicholas that, depending on how things proceed with regulators and so on, but all four are actually things that you could see built within a, if everything went perfectly, within a five-year time frame. I don't think there are many companies in that position. Our highest priority is QB2,
as we talked about before, and we're devoting a lot of our energy towards that, but we don't know exactly when it will be permitted. So that's quite a long answer. I hope I've touched on the various parts of your question, but capital allocation is clearly the most significant factor that the board looks at, and it will continue to look at it quite intensely.
I appreciate the color. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Don Oriel, if he's on the phone, given the volatility in the coal price, where do you feel the equilibrium price is? I'm not talking about incentive price long-term or things like that, just where you think the equilibrium price for the market actually is.
Well, Oriel is sitting right beside me, so I'll let him start, and depending on what he says, I may have something else to add.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. That's a good question, one that we're being asked quite often, and quite frankly, it's a bit tough to come up with a specific price range. What I can say is this year, or in the last couple months especially, that we've seen a lot of volatility again, but prices corrected maybe too much too quickly when they went to around the 140 level. Because if we look at the demand and supply side, I mean, it's a bit of a story of both demand and supply, that the price is where it is today. So on the demand side, crude steel production is up about 4.5% in the world, and growth rates are very similar in China and outside of China. And China itself is importing yearly record levels. And if you look at seaborne, year-to-date June, got 21.5 million tons. So that's 4 million tons year-over-year higher. And then other market areas are also doing really well in terms of demand. On the supply side, Australia, May year-to-date exports are down by 12 million tons, and that's mainly due to Cyclone Debby. But at the same time, U.S. and Mozambique exports are up 6 million tons and 2.5 million tons, respectively, for June year-to-date. But with that being said, Australia is recovering quicker than expected, and we're still seeing some supply disruptions in some of the areas, whether it's Australia or U.S. So there is still supply issues. Demand continues to be strong. Will the price stay at the level that it is right now? Assessments are now sitting in the high 170s, just under 180, actually. I'm personally actually a little bit surprised by the level that they have gone to. I would have thought it would have been maybe a little bit lower than that. I thought the 140 was probably a little bit too low, but kind of somewhere, I guess, below the 170 level is what we were expecting to see. Don?
Yeah, maybe the way I would phrase it, I don't disagree with anything that Rick said, is in the past I've said that the range of 140 to 160 seems to make some sense because it translates from the announced policy the Chinese government, the NDRC, has on what they want to do with thermal coal, and just goes back to the principles behind that they do want to have a profitable coal business in China. One of the big issues there is just the sheer amount of debt that coal industry carries. It's actually measured in percentage points of GDP, and I saw one estimate number as high as 8%. And they want the companies to be able to service those loans and maintain employment and so on. So if they're managing the thermal coal price to the range that they announced, that translates to a met coal price of 140 to 160. That doesn't mean that it can't spike down below the 140 to 125 or something, and likewise it doesn't mean it can't go above 160, which it currently is, but that seems to be the range that they want to manage to. We don't see these really low prices that some of the analysts are calling for, down to $100 or below, just because of the cost curve and you know, what we witnessed last time, where the shutdown started to take place was significantly above that. And so that's the range that we come to in the end, 140 to 160. And at those levels, and even with the increased Canadian dollar, that translates into a very healthy price for us and very strong cash flows. So that's the view from here.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Orest Wargadal from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. A question, I was looking for a bit of color on Fort Hills. Specifically, your CapEx estimate for this year went up by about $140 million from your release last quarter. Is that, should we interpret that as a capital cost inflation, or is that just an advancement of planned spending for 2018?
I'll turn that over to Tim Watson, and I may have an additional comment after.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the number or the increase from the 640 to the 780 is a couple of things. It's associated with some sort of ongoing pressure in terms of the field labor productivity issues, which we continue to see. And also there is a concerted effort to try to get as much of the construction completed within calendar year of 2017 to ensure that we have minimal construction required to complete in 2018.
Yeah, and I guess the part I would add, that last point is really important, because if you ended up, you know, having the project delayed for first oil into 2018, you know, every month there's very significant fixed costs that you'd be carrying, and that would really drive the project costs higher. So really all efforts are to get things done for first oil in December. I should say that Suncor is really the spokesperson. They're the operator, and they earlier had a conference call, and I can say earlier today on the Suncor call that Steve Williams said that the situation will not have any impact on the overall capital cost or the timing of the Fort Hills project. So they're obviously quite positive on the project, as are we.
Okay, and just as a follow-up, you mentioned earlier in your opening remarks that your position is that you don't need to fund more than a 20% proportionate share of Fort Hills. Does that imply that you've been asked to fund more than 20%?
No, and I should say again, as I said in the opening comments, we aren't in a position to really discuss the details of the funding issue while this matter is under discussion, and really have to leave it at that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Timna Tanners from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I just wanted to revisit the topic earlier of capital allocation in light of obviously the improved commodity price outlook, very good debt reduction, and the one at revenues or income that you should be expecting over the next 6+ months. Have you been at all tempted to consider additional growth projects, or can you give us above and beyond what you've talked about? Or are you sticking to kind of the ones that you've talked about? If you could just elaborate on any possible areas of interest beyond what you've discussed in the past, given the improved results.
Yeah, so the short answer is the latter. We haven't been tempted by anything as yet. It is true that in the normal course, we identify opportunities, and we have opportunities shown to us frequently by other companies and banks and so on. We do, as a matter of normal course, evaluate all of those things. Andrew Golding and his department are busy all the time, and Andrew's nodding his head, I think, you know, looking at all these things. But really, really nothing has sort of made it through our screen that would tempt us at the moment, no matter how much cash we have. If coal prices were still 300, I don't think we've seen anything that would make a difference. So we continue to work away on QB2. We continue to, partner with Suncor getting Fort Hills done. And, you know, we'll keep looking at all these things and always measuring, you know, our current in-house opportunities against things that are out there, because particularly because, you know, we like in QB2's case, we control the schedule. We own 76.5% of it. So if there was something better, then we could defer QB2 and go on to that. But right now, nothing's on the screen.
Okay, that's helpful. Can you elaborate also on the situation in Highland Valley and the potential for strike there? Just give us more of an update.
Yeah, I'll turn that over to Dale Andrews.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're still there was a strike vote held by the union earlier this month. We're still in active discussions and negotiations, and because of that, I really don't want to comment any further, as you could probably understand.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks again.
Thank you. The next question is from Lucas Pipes from FBR and Partners. Please go
yes.
ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. So, Réal, Don, you know, typically you realized about 92% of the benchmark, and now with the quarterly benchmark system effectively being replaced with an index, how would you recommend we model the ASB? I assume it's still an 8% discount, but, you know, there's been some volatility in the market. I wanted to make sure that we capture all those aberrations correctly. Thank you.
Over to Réal.
So thanks, Lucas. So at this point, we're expecting that our realized price will be within our historical range. The only difference will be, instead of comparing to the quarterly benchmark, we'll compare to the key premium hard coking coal price assessments. Mm-hmm. And just to add a bit of color on the mechanism, the majority of our quarterly price contract sales are based on the actual quarter lagged by 1 month. So what that means is that for Q2, for instance, the price is based on the average of the March 1st to May 31st period. And another important point is that those the relationships with the customers have not changed, and the contracted volumes for quality price tons have not changed either. So we still have similar visibility on those volumes. The only thing that's changed is the pricing mechanism. And as we've guided before, we have around 40% of our book that is priced on a quarterly basis.
Got it.
Réal, could I just ask you to comment, because I know the folks on the phone are models and they're looking out past sort of the next quarter. As we get into next year and we stop mining at Coal Mountain and that production is made up at the other sites, how do you see the discount to the average price assessment evolving then?
So we have capacity at the other mines to replace the production from Coal Mountain. Coal Mountain produces mainly lower grade material. Production from our other mines, we're in the process of looking at what that product release will look like for the additional products. So it's a little bit early to say exactly what impact that might have on our realized price for next year, Don, but we're looking at that very carefully, very closely between now and the end of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll be back to you with further details on that in the next quarter or so.
Yeah.
The main point being that the lower quality coal will deplete and we'll stop mining that. We do have higher quality coal at the other sites, but there are other factors that affect the pricing of those products.
But that's an interesting point, and maybe to just peel the onion on that one layer or so. If you look at your product, and I know you do a lot of blending and mixing and such, but if you were to look at your the discount versus the benchmark excluding Coal Mountain today or over the past year, what would that discount have been, 5% or 4%, or where would you put that?
That's a very good question, Lucas. I'd be guessing at an answer right now. I mean, the realization should be higher, but again, we need to complete our work looking at which products are going to replace the Coal Mountain production.
Okay. Well, but that's something valuable to keep in mind. And maybe one last question, still on coal sales and marketing. I think there was a headline or report out over the past 3 months that referred to you speaking to the Indian market more actively. Is that something that you're targeting, that you're maybe looking for further inroads and opportunities, and how could that impact your longer-term outlook on the market? Thank you.
Yeah, there were several headlines related to a visit. We had the Minister of Steel from India and senior executives from SAIL, the national steel producer, visit our sites earlier this month, I guess it was. And it seemed to get into the press quite a bit, not from us. But we have an ongoing dialogue there. Our sales to India have increased quite a bit over the last 3 years. Clearly, the government of India has big plans for steel production with a target of up to 300 million tons of annual steel production, which of course would require a large amount of steelmaking coal to be imported, given that they don't have much themselves currently. So we're optimistic about that. It of course does have increased transportation costs from here, but clearly the customers want to diversify their sources, and they value the reliability that we can provide. So we've had significant interest there, and I'll just turn it back to Rial in terms of our outlook for what percentage of our coal sales might go to India this year going forward.
So thanks, Don. We started selling coal to India back in 2011. And we've been increasing sales annually into that market to the point where it now represents somewhere around 10% of our book or so. The fact, like Don said, that India is the largest growth market for seaborne high-grade steelmaking coal is a market that we have a lot of interest in, and we've invested time and efforts to continue developing both with the privately owned steel mills and the government owned steel mills.
Okay. Well, good luck with all of that, and good job. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucas.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Fauzi Hanano from Behringer. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, on CapEx, just looking at your sustaining capital, it's tracking well behind the annual guidance of $530 million. Just wanted to know if you're expecting to recoup some of that into the second half, and how, on aggregate, that plays in along with the increase in CapEx for Fort Hills, as well as development of Baldy Ridge towards your $2.2 billion initial CapEx guidance. And my second question would be for Ron regarding cash tax. Looking at the cash tax paid of close to $300 million, which was the highest in quite a while, and also very close to the P&L tax provision, why wasn't it reduced more by the available tax pools like in previous periods?
Okay, Ron, over to you.
Okay, I'll take on the cash taxes first. So the cash taxes, it's very difficult to pick a number because the payments made reflect the installments that we have to make for 2017. They will also include settlement of additional payments that might be required for audits from the various tax regulators, and they will also include the final tax payments as we file our tax returns for the various countries for 2016. So the numbers can actually go all over the place. Buried in the cash tax numbers will be any refunds we might get from overpayment, And particularly in South America, the installments can be based on revenue or prior year's earnings, so the numbers can swing quite wildly depending on what the requirements are in those countries. So it's hard to give a number on exactly what the cash taxes will be. The other thing is we do have to pay the mining taxes in Canada. They are not sheltered by the tax pools. So those are sort of for the big swing in the numbers. On the capex is generally is somewhat back end loaded in all of our years. You know, most of our operations, particularly in the northern hemisphere, you've got the winter weather conditions, so it can be difficult to spend a lot of money in the early part of the year. But there will be catch up in the latter half of the year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Alex Tarantu from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just got one follow-up question here for Réal on timing of coal sales. I understand over the past year or so when we've had some of these spikes, you've noted how sales volumes have gone down and, you know, volumes have picked up when the prices have come back down. Is there a price below which you're seeing that buying interest stop? I mean, over the past couple of weeks, we've had coal prices go back up from, you know, call it 150 or so back to 170, 180 almost. And so are you seeing a constant level of buying interest? And just, that timing of sales has a big impact, obviously, on the price that you realize relative to the new index linked pricing mechanism.
So thanks, Alex. At the current pricing levels and the fact that the crude steel production has increased 4.5% year to date, demand is good in the market, and we're seeing regular purchasing at this time. The irregular purchasing that we described happened when the price spiked very quickly following Cyclone Debbie, and then as soon as customers had covered their short-term requirements, there were very few transactions in a period of about 5 weeks until prices returned to somewhere near to the pre-cyclone levels. But at the levels where prices are right now, we're seeing demand from most market areas in the world. On the timing of sales, so overall in our book, we have a variety of pricing arrangements. Some are index-linked directly. Actually, a larger portion now are index-linked. And some others also are negotiated on a fixed price basis. So when we negotiate a fixed price, of course, it's the fixed price at the time of negotiations. We end up negotiating somewhere between 30 and 45 days before that coal will load on vessels, because we need to allow time for the vessels to arrive. So you're quite right in that the timing of the sales impacts especially those fixed price sales.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting back to Mr. Phillips.
Don, turn it over to you for any closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us this morning. I think it was a really solid quarter. I'm particularly pleased that that we were able to advance the maintenance into the second quarter. So it sets us up for a really good Q3 and Q4. Second half of the year should be very solid as well, and we're starting it with pretty solid prices in each of coal, copper, and zinc, and a very, very tight zinc market. So I'm feeling really good about the position the company's in and where the balance sheet is, and you know, with essentially no debt due in 2017, 18, 19, and 20, this is a pretty good position. So we'll look forward to speaking to you in October. But I do want to say that today is Greg Waller's last quarterly call. And Greg, of course, has been with us for 33 years, and as you all know, is retiring at the end of September. I just want to say a special thank you on behalf of all of my colleagues and on behalf of all of you on the phone to Greg Waller for a terrific job done over many years. I don't know how many of these quarterly calls you've done, Greg, but I'm sure it's over 50 or 60.
Yeah, 50 or 60 now.
It must be getting up there. Greg, of course, has been one of the best in the business for many, many years, and in fact, in the last year or so, has won two key awards, the Bill Mulligan Award for Leadership in Investor Relations, to recognize individuals who've shown singular leadership in one or more aspects of the practice of investor relations. And this year, he also won the Serious Fellowship, which is the highest honor for investor relations professionals in Canada. I think it recognizes just the dedication and innovation, creative thinking that Greg's put to this really crucial function for any public company, and it's certainly been very crucial for tech. I just want to say a special thank you to you, Greg. You are absolutely a terrific friend to all of us, a terrific colleague, and just a true class guy. Thank you very much, Greg, for many years of dedicated service.
Thanks so much, Don, and it has been a great 33 years, and particularly the last 12 years with this management team has been a real pleasure, and thanks to some of those who have retired over the last few years who hopefully might be listening today, and I want to say a thank you to those that I've had the pleasure of working with the tremendous management team. Thanks so much for those kind words.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you all on the phone. We'll look forward to speaking to you in October. Bye now.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.